Hi, everyone.
My name's Pete, and I am an addict. What is our group called Wednesday night? That's what group it is. It's Wednesday night. We hear Who is an Addict read every meeting. And it's obviously really important that we do know and never forget just who we are. You know, for the longest time, in my active addiction, I just never quite accepted the fact that that's who I was. There were lots of other people in my life who knew what I was. My parents certainly knew that at a very early age I had a drug problem. And the whole reason I'm talking on this topic, first of all, I was asked, but if there's anyone here who, and it doesn't look like there is, but are there any newcomers here in this room at the moment? Probably not. A lot of these faces look familiar. Anybody here with 30 days or 60 days? 60 days? Good. 90 days? Okay, we do have some newcomers. That's good. Good. If you haven't maybe self-diagnosed in listening tonight to our discussion, maybe you'll see some similarities. Because it took a long time for me to come to grips with the fact that I was an addict. I knew I had a drug problem. At least when I used drugs, I got into trouble. It created chaos in my life and havoc in other people's lives. Certainly drove my folks crazy in my teens with my shenanigans and carrying on and staying out late and never showing up when I was supposed to, and my grades were horrible, and I was just doggone irresponsible, and I thought that was, you know, what the problem was. I was irresponsible, and I was just like everyone else. Certainly a lot of my teachers thought I had a drug problem, and that was why I was suggested that I get into a program when I was in high school, but that time the drug awareness wasn't anything like it is today in the school systems back in the 60s and the early 70s. So in 1970, I avoided going into a place called The Bridge, which was available for people who didn't quite seem to fit the norm in the home setting. Teachers, parents, there were girlfriends that had brought to my attention that they never saw anybody consume as much as quickly as I did, and when they tried to keep up, their lives became unmanageable, but they could stop. Usually after they stopped seeing me. But as far as me coming to grips with the fact that I was an addict happened years and years later, probably 16 years later. They were, in the meantime, there were run-ins in and out of hospitals, run-ins with the CID when I was in the military, fines and restrictions on post. Multiple problems with driving violations, countless. I remember when I applied for a job, they required that I have a driving record, and I sat down and tried to do it, and I really couldn't come up with all of them. Thanks. That's much better. It really, in and out of the hospitals, I was hospitalized with pancreatitis for my abuse of alcohol. I figured it was eight times between 1975 and 1979. Each hospitalization came more rapidly, with less time span in between, and it generally took less alcohol to bring that on. The thing was, I used other things besides alcohol, and I always blamed it on perhaps it was the combinations, the barbiturates or the tranquilizers that I was mixing with the alcohol that was maybe bringing on those hospitalizations. At very, very best in my lifetime, up until 86, the only abstinence from drugs there ever was a very brief period when I was in the military. I went with drugs, and I tried to use them all on the train on the way down to the Carolinas, and then a bus trip. I tried to use them up before I got on the bus, and was caught by the conductors in the back of the train, and I thought that was going to create problems. Even when I took the test in Philadelphia for the entrance, the day I got sworn in, I took a break and went on out and got pretty wrecked, and came back in. And I know as soon as I walked by the guy giving the test, he took one whiff of me and gave me a real close look, you know, when I sat down. But once I was inducted into the service for about 2.5 months, I think I was scared to death. They just kept you too damn busy, running and exercising, and I mean, you were under constant watch, and they kept you so doggone tired that was like the first time in my life I think I'd just fall asleep normally. I don't think I dreamt. I just fell into exhausted sleep, and then at 5 in the morning, you know, bang, 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 wake up. That was the only time I was drug-free. As soon as I got an off-post pass, I got high and topped, and I even got kicked out of the military because of my drug use and my alcohol use. Same thing. Combination. Jobs on and off. I mean, I stole from employers. I stole from friends. I wrecked cars. Some belonged to me, some belonged to friends, and some belonged to strangers. I sounds like an unmanageability list, doesn't it? In the work field, it was when I got married in 81, came to the realization that I was going to have to work regularly, because now I had responsibility for a wife and child, and that meant that I had to show up and do the best of my ability, you know, continue to show up. And that was something that I hadn't been doing in my my work career up until that point. At that time in my life, I had to use in the morning just to get going, and I would use throughout the day so I could continue, and I would use when I came home. And that would continue until I fell asleep. And that was a normal day. That was the average day. The only jobs I chose were jobs that I could use at. I generally worked with coworkers that also used. I didn't do well in jobs where there wasn't drug use on the job scene, on the work site. So my work career was kind of limited to, you know, things that sought me and or that fit me and fit my my using schedule. Did I mention I stole from employers? I think I stole from about every employer, one way or another. If I wasn't stealing tools to work with, I was stealing money, or I was stealing inventory. Very often I was stealing money, basically, at different jobs to also pay for my... There just wasn't enough money. You know, if I worked 40 hours, say, there wasn't enough. So I would steal more. After I got married, I worked a full-time job. Then I took on another second job. And I freelanced on the weekends and the evenings. And there still wasn't enough money. You know, and we lived very frugally. My living arrangements were in a garage apartment. It was above a six-car garage. It used to be a carriage house, but it was on a big estate. And I worked, I did tree work full-time, and then I worked on the estate on weekends and evenings. And I also freelanced and cut lawns and leaf removal and tree side jobs on the weekend. There was never enough money. And I think, for real, the way how I had worked it out was that all I had to do was work hours of work. I didn't even have to pay money. So rent was basically a trade-off, but there would be on bill days, which was usually Fridays when I got paid, it was the old thing about the Friday blues, you know, that there wasn't enough money to pay Pete after the bills were paid, so Pete would usually pay Pete before the bills got paid. That was my norm. Either that or be a bear, you know, a rant and rave. I didn't think I had a drug problem unless I didn't have any drugs. That was my drug problem. You know, when I was in that that term denial, for real, I don't think I ever thought myself personally I had a drug problem until someone who I loved dearly had brought it to my attention that I really need to get help. I really need to stop. If I can't, they're going to leave me. That was really the first time that I actually tried to stop. I tried to stop drinking for years. I had succeeded in that through the help of my higher power and a lot of substitution. At that time, I didn't know about this program. I hadn't been directed here yet, but I do remember sincerely asking God for help one night. I was flat on my back in the Martin Army Hospital, and I was about ready to be discharged from the military for my last hospitalization of pancreatitis. At that point, it was called chronic relapsing pancreatitis. It was no longer acute. It was chronic. And they said I was unfit for military duty. And at that point, I really did feel pretty helpless. I tried to stop numerous times. I'd be successful for maybe a few months, maybe a half year at the very most. But I always ended up back to it, and once I started, I couldn't stop, and then I was off to the races, anything and everything that came my way. I had asked God to help me with the drinking. I knew that what the doctors were telling me finally was sinking in, that I was going to die if I didn't quit, and I couldn't quit. And I asked him for help, and that was my last drink in 79. However, I didn't stay abstinent by any means. Once I got discharged, I immediately, and the whole time I was on medical hold, I had passes in town to get narcotics and whatever I needed or could find in Columbus. And eventually, when I was discharged, I was... I had a monkey, definitely, in, on my back, and I had a habit to feed, and I was going back to... Home wasn't there anymore. My folks had moved. My brother had moved. I didn't go back to New Jersey. I ended up going to outside of Philadelphia, starting all over again, fresh, and until I found those people, places, and things that are so familiar. I was a nutcase. You know, I would find myself hitchhiking 200 miles to old people places and things to cop. Once I found it on the main line, then that's pretty much where I stayed and got married. And like I said, I used right up and through the first 6 years of my marriage. And my daughter was approaching six. And my wife had had it. It had it up to here, you know, with me not being there and me always being irresponsible and not having enough money, and even though there was plenty of money. She said, you need to get help. And I was directed to these rooms, and that's when I started to find out about my addiction. Because, you see, I just thought I was a hardworking, deserving, getting older party animal. You know, I liked to party, and I never thought it was anything more than recreation. I never looked at it as it was. I never thought it affected anybody else but me. That was brought to my attention. Pete, you're driving around with a half a pound behind the seat of your car. If you're pulled over and for some reason they flip the seat up, what's going to happen to us? You know, you're obviously going to go to jail. And as the only breadwinner at the time, that would have created a major problem for them. Although those kind of things never dawned on me. I think that's part of the self-centered, selfish part of the disease that I have, that I don't think really clearly. I don't see the consequences of my behavior until they happen. And then they're rather unfair and severe. But they're just the normal consequences of my behavior. Am I an addict? My whole life was centered around using, around finding drugs, and unfortunately the consequences of my drug addiction. No matter what part of my life or time period of my life you talk to me about, Pete, what's your drug of choice? You know, depending on the year, maybe depending on the season, that answer to that question would vary. But it always has been centered around drug use, one form or another. And I think I probably would have gone to the bitter end if there hadn't been some intervention, if I hadn't reached out and asked for help, and like the cavalry, my higher power put help in the way, and within 24 hours there was a meeting list sitting on the coffee table, and that's what started my experience here. I didn't have the option of a rehab at that time. Tree workers normally, especially with a small company in 86, they didn't have insurance that covered rehabs. What was available with these meetings? And I don't know if I would have gone to a rehab anyway. You know, I think I was still in that denial thing that, no, there's no way I can afford to not be working for a month. In fact, I couldn't even see how I could go to meetings every day, but the season was such that the grass just didn't grow that year. And I had all kinds of free time in the evening. You know, what normally would have to be done every week, I was able to do once a month, and I found myself in meetings every night. And in the beginning, I sure didn't want to be there. All I could do was listen to people, and I couldn't identify in the beginning. They were either worse than I was, or they can't be like me. They're too damn happy. They look too clean. They're smiling. They're hugging. They're not like me. I was miserable, and I was frightened, and I was angry, and I was a lot of things, but I wasn't an addict. I had no clue how to stay clean. That was shown to me by a fellow who I asked for help to be a sponsor. He kind of helped me stay clean one day at a time. He drug me through the steps. I experienced a relapse, and he said, "Well, that's because that's what you do, Pete. That's who you are. That's what addicts do." And that was a long time ago, but one day at a time. Am I an addict today? Absolutely. Today I took a close friend to the. I took her to the doctor's yesterday. She had twisted her knee, and wasn't really swollen, but they felt that she should go to the hospital. And I took her yesterday, and they took X-rays, and they said what we thought it was, that it was a twisted knee where there were some torn ligaments, and they had scheduled a meeting with another doctor this morning at 8 o'clock in Altoona. So we left from Bedford and drove up to Altoona this morning. We're there by 8, picked up the X-rays at Altoona Hospital. And after she had her doctor visit, she said, they wrote me a script. And in passing, I asked, what did they write you? I figured they were going to yesterday. And she told me, what it was. And I said, you really ought to let me have a few of those to sample them to let you know if they're okay or not. And I chuckled, and she knew exactly where I was coming from. And, of course, she wouldn't give them to me because she knows very well, who I am. And we joked about it. But you know what? It wasn't a joke. That's exactly where my mind goes. You tell me you got narcotics, and immediately that's, I was just saying last night to somebody that, you stay abstinent for a period of time, you really start to enjoy it. You wouldn't want to trade it for anything. And then here the next morning, I'm playing with my sobriety, thinking, it'd be nice to do 4 or 5. But in driving back, I told her where I was going this weekend, and we both chuckled and laughed and said, "Yeah, that would have been real good, Pete." I don't want to give up my clean date. I had about 12 years clean in the program, and I'd lost my father to cancer and my mother to a heart attack 2 years prior. And my brother and I came into a sizable inheritance. I always knew my folks were comfortable, but I had no idea. I mean, I know the value of a dollar, but I sure don't know the value of a lot of dollars, especially with lots of zeros on them. And there was an awful lot of guilt and an awful lot of, boy, I wished I had a, and I, if I'd only been a better son, they'd, my parents were very proud of me when they died. They had seen me clean for about 12 years, and they saw the Pete that they had never known prior. They started to see that Pete as a child, but as an adult, without the insanity in his life and in their lives, in my active addiction. And they were very proud of me, and I know that because I talked to a lot of their friends after they had died, and they said, "Oh, yeah, we know all about you. You're that son out in central Pennsylvania." And he had shown us, or your father had shown us pictures of your home and all the work. I know they were proud. But I had always felt that I had really fallen short, as far as a son. There was a lot of guilt involved. And I guess between the work schedule I had, where meetings were so few and far between, that I had literally primed myself for relapse. And I did. I had relapsed probably on and off for about 2.5 years until I was honest enough to say, I've had enough, and I need help. And that was just prior to the change of this new century. So I really don't want to change my clean date, January 1, 2000, today. So on a daily basis, I try and do the next right thing. But you know what? I'm always going to be an addict. And I have to come to meetings like this and introduce myself. And you have to introduce yourselves. And I have to listen and I have to participate in one form or another in order for me to keep it real green and to keep it real, who I am. And I've probably talked way too long. You have another speaker, don't you? Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Pete. I'd like to introduce the second speaker, who, there you go, Keith from Beaver Valley, and I'm not sure your number, Pete.
Common Vaughn. Keith, and definitely addict, and I can't believe I'm up here right now because we got lost and we basically started flipping coins, and we took the wrong road by the flip of a coin and stopped to ask somebody, and we turns out, you know, we're 3 minutes down the road. So, and I want to thank John for asking me, you know, to do this. I was extremely honored when he asked me at the region meeting like a couple weeks ago. So, who is the addict? You know, of course, I thought of a couple examples, you know, once John asked me, and you know, I thought of a couple things, and one thing that really, really stuck out to me was like the whole, you know, a thousand too many, one is too many thousands, never enough, you know, and sometimes I'm even kind of like arrogant about that whole concept, you know. I remember like, I don't know, I think I had about maybe 8 months clean or something, and this guy where I work at came up to me. And I knew he had some, you know, he had some pharmaceuticals that I liked, you know, and he showed me a couple, and, you know, basically I would look at it like, you know, you were going to need like a 50-gallon bucket, you know, if I want to relapse, because that's, I mean, just like I'm sure anybody, I mean, the tolerance builds up and then it's just like, you know, so... It just that just really sticks out to me because it really was never enough, man. It just never, you know, like my enough was basically like, you know, so it's just kind of out of it, you know. That was enough for me, you know. It was enough when I was just like out of it, you know. I mean, I could like move around and do stuff, you know, and go somewhere, but you know, I was like just out of it. And you know, and I guess like the ultimate enough is like doing too much and dying, you know, like just maybe not waking up at sleeping or ODing or something. You know, and thank God up until this point, at least I haven't reached that point. So, you know, I'm definitely an addict. You know, I had a lot of progression with like my using. Like I had like 5 different drugs of choice, you know. It just went from one to the other, and it's funny. I was talking to someone the other day, and like the first like month or maybe with different, you know, maybe 6 months of every time I tried a different drug, it really like it did a lot for me. You know, it did like what I wanted it to for like a month or like maximum 6 months, you know, and then it just stopped working, you know. And I think that played a lot into my progression. It just, you know, there's other things that played into progression too, like always having to be different. I always had to do, you know, like I always had to be in the bathroom, you know, like everyone's here doing this. Well, I always had to like go in the bathroom and do like more, you know what I mean? Like something else or something. And you know, I thought I was cool because of that, and I was like, you know, I was like, you know, above everyone, and I guess I definitely got some feelings of superiority out of that. I remember, like, when I first, my first drug of choice, was reefer, and I remember, like, you know, when I first started using it, you know, you have, like, a little pipe, you know, little tiny piece, and, you know, by the time I was done using, it's like this, you know, thing that's, like, bigger than me to, like, use this stuff, you know what I mean, this huge bong or something, and, it's funny because I always thought, like, we would, like, create these different, like, paraphernalia, like, tubes and, like, wires and, you know, different pieces and nuts and bolts and stuff, you know, to get high with, you know. And, like, you know, whatever I had, like, smoking reefer, I mean, I got the same high whether I had, like, something like this or something like this. I mean, you know, it just didn't even matter. So it just, you know, it cracked me up thinking that, you know, I'm being an addict, you know, it's just like, I have friends nowadays that still use, you know, and they use drugs that, like, that I didn't really use in the end, and I don't understand that, but, you know, they still, like, you know, whether they're addicts or not, I don't know, but they still use, like, they'll still just smoke joints or whatever, but, I know with, you know, in high school, is I think when most of that was going on, you know, it was always like, it was just never enough, you know, it was always like searching for like this like extra buzz or something, you know, like something better than, like, you know, it always had to be this huge bomb or, you know, things, and it just got bigger and bigger, and it just, you know, until it was like I said, I mean, the thing was just like massive, and, you know, so I was always in search of, like, some extra buzz, you know, something more. And, like, I think this gentleman here was saying, you know, I'm definitely still an addict, you know, I still have, you know, so many behaviors. Like, the behaviors that I have that I think are addictive are basically, like, to me, using was, like, especially in the end, I was doing something that I didn't want to do because I felt, like, compelled to do it. Like, I had to do it, you know, or I was going to be sick. And, you know, if I had my choice, of course, you know, I remember this one particular time driving over this bridge, you know, and it was toward the end, and I hadn't eaten for a couple of days, and, you know, I was feeling pretty rough, and I could almost, like, reach my hands around my stomach, you know, like, almost like that, and I thought to myself, if I had any control over this, you know, I wouldn't be in this situation, you know, I wouldn't be hungry and sore and, you know, all those other withdrawal symptoms that come along with it, and, you know, like, skinny as I could possibly be, but there was just that, just like this, you know, compulsion or whatever that, you know, regardless of, like, really what I wanted, you know, like, I was using that day, you know, and it was just like, and another thing that lets me know I'm an addict, and I have my experiences too, you know, like, I was clean at one point. I've been in treatment like 3 times, and, you know, what I found out is, like, after going into treatment, you know, I would be clean for a short period of time, and then I would start using. And once I start using, like, I used every day, you know. There was no, like, I couldn't take any breaks. I couldn't do weekends. I couldn't do, like, every other day. You know, like, if I was using, it was every day. And it was, like, you know, whatever I could afford during that day. So I know that today too, you know. I know without a doubt, you know, because I have my experiences, you know. I tried. I have a friend now that is trying to, like, just drink, and I told him my experience, and, you know, I hated when they told me at first, but some people were like, "Oh, honey, you know, don't do it," and then other people were like, "Go do it and find out, you know, find out for yourself," and that's what I ended up doing, you know. So that's what I told him. I said, you know, go do it. I mean, hopefully you won't like start doing other stuff and die, you know. But so you know, so I tried the drinking thing too, and so I know for a fact that, like, you know, I can guarantee that would lead me back to, you know, my drug of choice. And like I said, I already have enough experience knowing that, especially if I'm doing that, like, I'm doing it every day. And I can't maintain full-time. I can't do work. I can't be a full-time addict at the same time. It's like one or the other, you know. As my addiction progressed, there was different drugs that had different effects on me, you know, and like the drugs in the end were the worst, as far as like consequences and not being able to like function and like work and or go to school. And you know, I know for a fact that I can't do full time both. You know, it's like one or the other. I'm either using and doing like maybe a little bit of whatever, you know, or I'm doing, you know, like I am now. I work full time, and I'm not using, you know, and I have a lot of other time for other stuff. I remember the last day, one of the last days I used, which was kind of, you know, a motivator for me to get clean, was, you know, all the stuff was out, and I had stayed at my dad's that night in Mount Lebanon, and I had a friend over, and there was some, you know, we had it all the stuff laid out, planned to get up in the morning, and of course, didn't wake, you know, fell asleep, nodded off, whatever. And, you know, dad came home, saw all the stuff. And I remember, you know, I remember clearly that the first thing I did when he had woken me up, you know, I was sleeping, sitting up, and my friend was sleeping, sitting up too. And he had woke me up, and the first thing I did, you know, was like, I looked over and I saw some of my stuff on the floor, and I grabbed it and ran upstairs. You know, it wasn't, you know, what somebody that maybe who isn't an addict would think. Okay, you're in this situation. Well, what do you do? You get up and like start to sort your life out, or maybe you start to think about going into rehab or just something. You know, my first move was like grab this bag and go upstairs and do it. You know, and feel better. You know, get some temporary relief out of it. So I know that's definitely I think good addict thinking. You know. Put everything aside for like the drug, you know, everything is secondary. And like I was saying earlier, like, you know, and it's I catch myself today still, of course, doing, you know, addictive things. You know, I mean, to sum that up, basically I do things that I don't want to do because I feel good, and I later on get in trouble because of it. And I've definitely, you know, I could definitely give myself some credit, I guess, because I think I've definitely improved in that area with, like, you know, not being as impulsive and, like, yeah, I know it's going to feel good, but I know in one area in particular, actually, which I've been doing really good at, but it took some, you know, it took some help to get there. It actually took someone else getting in trouble, you know, and I learned from it, which is unbelievable. You know, that's really unbelievable, and I hope it really sticks, because I mean, you know, I talk to people all the time. Like, I work in a treatment facility, and I mean, if I, you know, of course, if they could, like, whatever advice I have or anybody, you know, people that work there, if I, you know, if they could, or if I could just learn from others' mistakes, you know, I wouldn't be here, and you know, we probably wouldn't be here, I guess. But, you know, I got to find out for myself. But those addictive behaviors do surface, man. And I remember one thing that sticks out is I had this job. It was about a year and a half ago. And I had got fired, I guess, or eliminated or something, because I didn't put, you know, something on the application. And you know, I think this is an addictive behavior too, because basically when this happens, you know, I didn't want to use, but I wanted to like do something to the equivalent to hurt myself. You know what I mean? Like my thought really was I wanted to drive my car into a telephone pole. You know, to take whatever, you know, I'm still baffled by that. I don't know if that's like to take the focus off of what's really going on, or to like make people feel bad for me, or to like hurt myself physically or what, you know, but I definitely consider that an addictive behavior, because that's pretty much what using was. You know, it was like, I know this is harmful to my body. I know I could suffer like legal consequences, you know, I'm not going to school, and all these consequences, you know, that like I'm aware of. But, you know, but I'm hurting myself, you know, I'm putting myself in danger, and, you know, basically, like they say, killing myself on the installment plan. So, that cracks me up, though. I guess I should be, like, I should definitely be grateful that my first thought wasn't to use. You know, it was, I mean, it wasn't a good thought, you know, it was still something harmful, but it wasn't to use, you know. And I get that a lot too, you know. I get a lot of like, I had something happen like 4 months ago, you know, and I wanted to like react in a certain way, you know, and I didn't. And you know, I mean, to be honest with you, it wouldn't be me if I did react in that way, because I'm not like that. You know, it was punching somebody basically. You know, I wanted to punch somebody, and I didn't. You know, and that's not usually how I react, but just like as an addictive behavior, impulsive, you know what I mean? This is what I want to do, so like go do it, you know. I really don't have much else to share. I'm really, you know, it's just, I had a lot of faith coming up here, you know, and I feel guilty that I didn't even hear the readings. I guess I did readings probably. And I didn't even get to make that, and I just showed up, and I can't believe Luann told me that I was up next. And so, you know, I guess it's just a lesson, you know, a lesson in having hope, man, having some faith, and that's really all I got. Thanks for listening.
Thanks to both Pete and Pete for the message. We have a nice way of closing. Would you form a circle, please? And we will close with the wee version of the Serenity Prayer. Oh, I'm sorry. Can we have this for today? I skipped a whole line there. He told me I could follow directions.
That's it. I'm still, I'm an addict. Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program I will try to follow to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associate.